101, a version 1 podcast.
Hi everybody, thanks for tuning in today. I'd like to welcome James Hall to the 101 podcast. Thanks, James, for joining us.
Thanks very much, Jamie.
So, just starting off with some background, but firstly, you keep it nice and simple, you're a Yorkshire lad, aren't you, born and bred?
That's right, yeah, we're all from York, pretty much. I work at a company called Parallax. We're a digital innovation agency. We do all sorts of stuff from brochure websites right through to sort of IoT applications and mobile phone apps.
And everything else in between.
That's right, yeah.
Can tell us a little bit about what sort of projects you're currently working on. What sort of things are we likely to see coming out of Parallax within the next few months?
So from an IoT point of view, we've been working on a street lighting project for Lucy's Odeon. So this is rolling out in Scotland at the moment, and hopefully we'll get some work in the Middle East and Leeds. It's basically connecting streetlights to the internet through radio waves so that they can be controlled and monitored from the internet, basically.
Pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
So you've also had some sort of celebrity endorsement. I think you've worked for quite a few famous people. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we did a bit of work for David Guetta a few years ago using some serverless technology. And I think one of his quotes was, some geniuses from Leeds have done an amazing mobile app.
And was that you, James?
No, it wasn't me.
Perfect. You've also had some sort of very interesting post-it notes left on your desk. I think when I get notes, normally it's from my wife potentially saying, you know, don't forget to take out the rubbish, don't forget to feed the cat, etc. But I think you had one of the most exciting messages left on your notepad that I've ever heard. So just tell us a little bit, who was it that you got asked to call back?
Yeah, so I had ring NASA as one of my post-it notes to get back to. I had to pinch myself a little bit, but yeah, they were using one of our projects. But
please tell me it was on rockets, please. No?
Unfortunately not, no. So NASA were using a project that we built in 2009 for some of their administration and documenting and processes. So we managed to help them out with some of that, which was really good.
And they were using a product that you wrote, is that right, James?
That's right, yeah. It's an open source product called JSPDF. We wrote it in 2009.
So that's available. It's open source, so anyone can go ahead and download this and use it.
It's used in all sorts of products. SAP use it in their business objects product. We've done a little bit of work for them. But the main actual project itself is open source, freely available.
What does it do?
It converts stuff into PDFs, essentially. Back when I started writing it, there was a comment on a forum saying, how do I make a PDF in JavaScript? And someone replied, that's not possible. You can't do that. So that was enough.
That was the challenge.
Yeah. I thought, hang on a sec, roll my sleeves up.
I'm sure I can.
Browsers at the time were quite... It was quite difficult to do this kind of stuff. So you had sort of IE 5.5 kicking about at the time. Generating binary files was pretty tricky. So we sort of broke the problem down, started with the simplest thing that could work, and just sort of built on it from there, really.
And that's been used quite widely, hasn't it? I think I'm not sure how many downloads you've seen, but it's got a GitHub repository, hasn't it, that people can go to. I think is it Mr. Rio? Is that your?
Yeah, that's right. It was one of the top 10 repos on GitHub. It was in the top 10 on Hacker News a few years ago.
Not that we endorse hacking, of course.
No. Of course, hackers...
Can be good as well as
bad. The term hacker, really, for programmers is just changing and messing around with software, whereas the sort of the public
perception
of the term is
more negative than perhaps it
should
be.
More negative than it should be, yeah, definitely.
Thanks for that, James. So, yeah, the JSPDF GitHub repository is available, so, you know, get on there, take a look, and download it if you think it might be useful. So... Can tell us a little bit about what else you're currently working on.
So we've been working on a car parking application. So you can book your car parking tickets through a mobile app, and it uses ANPR, which is automatic number plate recognition.
That's something the police use normally.
Yeah,
isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, if you've been doing bad things, well, even if you haven't, I suppose. So you can get straight into the car park, and you can pay for it all through your mobile, so that's rolling out across the UK as well.
So you've seen quite an upturn in mobility, obviously, applications, mobile applications still on the increase?
Yeah, most people use everything on their phone now. They even, to think 15, 20 years ago, people using mobile banking apps on their phone, it It's crazy how much it's shifted, really.
Although the benefit of not having a mobile phone was that I could always find it. That was the thing. I could find the other one. It was tied to the wall. Yeah, this one, yeah. I think I must have gotten through at least 15. At least.
Yeah, it's been really good, the shift to mobile applications, which sort of brings us onto serverless, really.
Thanks for that. You're very heavily involved with the AWS community. Can you just tell us a little bit about that, how you got involved maybe to start off with?
Yeah, sure. So a few years back, we set up a AWS meetup group for people using Amazon Web Services. That went really well. It went from strength to strength. Off the back of that, we ended up working on a project for David Guetta and UEFA using serverless. So we use a lot of AWS infrastructure in that. And off the back of that, Amazon made me an AWS hero, but I didn't get a cape or anything like that.
Well, it's a shame.
But they do send me to Vegas to go to the reInvent conference, where I get to learn about all the new exciting technology that they've got going on there.
That sounds great. So what we're here to talk about today is serverless technology, and it's something that perhaps people have heard a little bit about, but not perhaps become too familiar with. Starting off with the basics, can you tell us a little bit about what serverless is?
Yeah, so the main thing everyone asks when they hear the term serverless is, well, where are the servers? There's got to be some servers, right?
And there are.
There are.
Right.
Yeah. There are. Serverless just means you don't have to worry about those servers. So it's part of how your application is deployed. As soon as a request comes in, it picks up the code along the way, finds somewhere for it to run, runs that little bit of code, and then it shuts down again. So it's very, very on demand. You don't care about the underlying infrastructure at all, or having servers sat there waiting for a particular request. It's just using Amazon's spare capacity to deliver results and replies to the HTTP request.
So in a traditional architecture, you've got a server waiting there to serve a request. Less recently, those servers were sort of hosted on site, or and still are in many cases. Obviously, we've seen a big shift to cloud infrastructure. So with an application running on one of those servers, you've got to have the box there, you've got to have the application operating system on there, yeah. And that's all got to be sat there 24 hours a day waiting to serve that request if that's required. As we've moved into cloud, you know, we are seeing people begin to shut down servers, aren't we, when they're not utilised, and spin them up when they are.
That's right. So that was the next step in the evolution of cloud computing, is that instead of having the one box, you'd have two, three, four, and however many you need. You'd have a load balancer before that. So the request comes into the load balancer, and it decides which server to send your traffic to. So you can actually add more capacity to your infrastructure just by adding more boxes.
And serverless is really a sort of next generation or further extension of that, in so much as the functions are actually called individually and answered upon request and remain in a stateless.
So instead of having a load balancer and a bunch of servers sat there waiting to have a request, the request comes in, it picks up the code along the way and then finds a server for it to live on at that moment. So these could be servers that aren't currently being used, that AWS just has to hand. So it's very, very cheap. It's billed per second, and it allows for very, very dramatic scaling opportunities. So you can go from one request a second to a million requests a second without any overhead or problems at all.
And it's a really, really good way to... it's a really good use of computing power that's remaining spare, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. And it means you don't have to over-provision. So an example of this was a project we did for UEFA. We knew that they were going to use the URL on TV. We didn't know exactly when they were going to say it. And traditionally what you'd do is you'd set up the website and you'd drag the slider across to the number of servers you'd want, and you'd set it to a point where you were comfortable enough that it might handle all the requests, but not so uncomfortable that it's going to break the bank. So
most people are over-provisioning in that case, aren't
they?
Yeah,
definitely over-provisioning. So you'd be spending thousands and thousands of pounds in the run-up when there's absolutely nothing happening. And then as soon as they read the URL out on the TV, the inevitable happens, and you haven't dragged it further
and
far enough.
Yeah. Massive scrabble for the bar.
That's it, yeah. So with serverless, it allowed us to not worry about that at all. And the first hit they get is directly from S3 as a static file, and then each part of the process of this application was a different serverless function. So instead of it being $4,000 or $5,000 a day just burning away, it actually ended up costing less than a few hundred pounds for the whole campaign, which is an absolutely massive cost saving.
Steel.
And you don't have to worry about the infrastructure as well. So it's a complete game changer, to be honest.
Moving on to sort of why it's important or why serverless is important. I mean, I think a lot of people will be looking at it from a business perspective. So when we look at why people should care, what's the major benefit that businesses are going to see in serverless architecture?
The major benefit is reducing your DevOps costs. So you can have non-technical people write code, run it in the cloud, and if it works for one request, it'll work for a million. The way that you think about your architecture changes quite dramatically, and you can have less experienced developers write a bit of code, and it doesn't touch the rest of your infrastructure. So you could even start with a legacy monolith application and add sprinkles of serverless to it. Let's say you've got a long-running process like a PDF export or some kind of image generation or something. You could offload that to a serverless function. You don't need to put it into a database queue. You don't need to have any sort of SQS or background worker running. You can just fire those off as HTTP requests, and the serverless architecture will just deal with it, whatever the volume is. If it works for one request, it'll work for many. So it's really good in that regard.
Okay, perfect. I mean, we mentioned skills there as well. So is there a different skill set? I mean, I think you said you potentially don't need some of the sort of more high level or more deeper knowledge, as it were, to be able to operate in a serverless environment. So is there any new skills that developers need to be aware of, make themselves capable of in order to adopt serverless? Or is it something that anybody can pick up and run with if you've got a basic knowledge of legacy systems?
I think for people working with legacy systems, it's easy to pick up because they just need to pick a language of their choice. Serverless runs on many different languages these days. You can use the JVM, you can use Node.js, whatever you want. Obviously, Azure Functions has C# and all the rest of it. The good thing is you can start small and sort of work up from that.
So typical benefits of cloud infrastructure.
Yeah. I think the main benefit really is that you don't need anyone with a background in DevOps or infrastructure, and if you launch a bit of code that's slow or inefficient, it doesn't actually kill your infrastructure. So Amazon deals with all that, or Microsoft, or whoever you go with. Each function is run in isolation.
So there are a number of different serverless providers that you can use. I think AWS is Lambda, and I think Azure also have
Azure Functions, and there's also Google Cloud Functions.
Okay, and typically they're sort of relatively similar. Do you know of any differences between them?
All the options from the different cloud providers are very similar, and they come at sort of relatively similar price points. In fact, Lambda has a 1 million request per month for absolutely free on their free tier.
Yeah, I read about that. So a lot of people, if you're looking to get into it and test it and have a little play about, you can try the AWS version for absolutely nothing. It's at no cost to you, isn't that right?
That's right. And for many websites, a million requests would satisfy most needs for a basic e-commerce site or a brochure site. You'd host the main site itself on S3 as static files, and then any functionality you can just layer on top as Lambda functions.
So that's a great tip there for the cost conscious. Get out there and start using the free element of AWS Lambda there. I'm not too sure on the others, but I know that one is definitely available.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking about the different providers as well leads us nicely on to portability. So, I mean, presumably once you've written a piece of code in AWS, AWS Lambda, you can pick it up and you can shift it across to one of the other cloud providers. And I think that is something that's worth mentioning. It's perhaps not as easy as people might think. So this leads you into a conversation where you need to think carefully about the serverless environment that you choose. Comments on that, James?
Yeah, it's not just a lift and shift, unfortunately. When Lambda first came out, the only way to access it was through something called API Gateway. And people were joking that it's sort of API Gateway drug because it sort of keeps you locked into that ecosystem. There are a few frameworks out there now which allow you to more easily shift between the different providers. Unfortunately, it ends up that when you write a function in Amazon Lambda, for example, you end up using a lot of Amazon's backing services, and that's where the real tie-in comes. The code you write in the function itself is quite portable, but once you start relying on things like DynamoDB, you are pretty much locked in then. So it's worth considering that when you start rolling stuff out.
Yeah, so have a think about your infrastructure. Well, have a think about the future up front, I think is probably what the message looks like there. Is that
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you end up using DynamoDB as your database, you are pretty much locked in there. So it's worth considering that upfront.
Perfect. So when we look at the offerings from you know big hitters in the tech world, obviously they're going to be very keen, aren't they, to keep pushing forwards and keep developing new things, keep you know trying to be one step ahead of the competition. So what new or upcoming improvements or changes to the serverless framework, you know, do you think are coming, first of all, and secondly, which ones do you think that are going to be the most exciting?
Well, I had a chat with the serverless framework guys in Vegas last year, and they're working a lot on monitoring and event logging. The real difficult thing in serverless at the moment, when you get a complex application, because they all run in different functions and across multiple servers, it's quite difficult to get a trace of what exactly happens in your application. So you might hit one function that then calls another and another, and getting that sort of log and sensible idea of what went wrong and when, I think that's going to be a real opportunity for people to commercialize and build products on top of to help you sort of debug and manage that problem. So something else I'm excited about from a serverless point of view is how Amazon have built in their Cloud9 IDE into the Lambda infrastructure, so you can actually start debugging Lambdas online. So I don't know if you've seen the Cloud9 editor, but it started as a sort of open source project. I think it was a different company that potentially spun out of Mozilla, if I'm right. And they had a really cool product. They snapped them up, and they've done a full integration into AWS, so you can actually test each function in isolation, set breakpoints, and it's just a really good development experience, and I think that's something to definitely keep an eye on.
Okay, so as companies push forwards and begin using serverless, how do you think companies can harness it to make their innovation or keep ahead of their competition in a digital world?
It'll help them keep ahead because it'll allow them to do a lot of experimentation without any risk of ruining the existing infrastructure or any massive outgoing costs. So, for example,
it's going to allow people to sort of have a go and see, and you know, if it were more of an agile development environment.
Yeah.
You know, obviously a lot of people are very familiar with agile, but when we talk about agile as a project management framework, we're not sort of mentioning that here, are we? I think what we're talking about is agility as a company, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you look at, there's some great case studies like CodePen, for example. Some developers may be familiar with that, but it's essentially a website that allows you to just try a little bit of code out, see what it looks like and share it with other people, and it gets very, very popular. So originally they built this as a monolith. So it was a large Ruby on Rails application. They then split it into two, what they termed mini-liths, which was one large monolith for their login and infrastructure and all the rest of it. And the other one, all it did was did the code compilation. So as you're typing your JavaScript, your HTML, it would compile it on the fly and render it out. They were running on Heroku, and it cost a hell of a lot of money for them to run this infrastructure. So they started looking at Lambda as a way to make it more secure. So as I mentioned earlier, each Lambda function runs in isolation. So each time someone edited the code, it would then compile that CSS, JavaScript, whatever it is, into the resulting form. They had a look at Lambda just from a security point of view. They gave it a go, and actually they found it was cheaper and faster to do it that way. So they ended up moving compiler by compiler out into this new serverless application. CodePen's a really amazing case study of that, because they have a very, very, very small team, and they managed to move very quickly at the same time.
What more could you want, really?
Yeah, exactly. And that could be brought into any sort of large application. Or team.
Start small, see how you go, and cherry pick the pieces from you know, cherry pick the pieces that are working from any project.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Any piece of work. We mentioned there as well the, you know, people you know learning as they go. Do you know of any resources out there for people that are trying to learn serverless or would like to know a little bit more about it? Is there anything that you can steer people to that you think is good?
Yeah, there's some great resources. There's a Cloud Guru, which I would recommend. There's lots of videos on AWS on there, and it touches on a lot of the topics that we've mentioned today as well. I find that videos are quite a good format for me to learn.
I've always done the same, yeah. Get a video on... I'm sure there's a massive YouTube library, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, books are good, but they often take quite a long time to write, and by the time they're written, they might be a little bit out of date. So
quite dry as well, I always find.
Yeah, that's it. Once you see someone code as well, you can sort of get a feel for how they're putting it together and their thought process, whereas it can be quite difficult just slogging through a book when you just want to get coding, really.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, James. Now, some great tips out there for people that want to try and understand serverless architectures a little bit more. Before we finish, can you tell us a little bit more about what's coming up for you, James, in the future? What's the next few months look like?
Yeah, so next up for me is this street lighting project. So we're actually working with something called the Torque Organization, which is a set of standards that let IoT devices interconnect with each other. So it's a way of sort of making sure councils don't get sort of vendor lock-in when they roll out smart cities and stuff like that. Because a big problem at the moment is you might buy lights from one vendor, smart bins and buses from another vendor, and they all use different systems. So the idea is to sort of bring that data all into one place. So that's what the next sort of few months looks like to me, just getting all that working.
Keeping you nice and busy.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so thanks for that, James. So I think in summary, serverless is a technology that we are expecting to be seeing more of in the future. Take a look at some of the free resources out there and begin building with it, see what you can come up with. I think we're going to have to draw it to a close now. So thanks go to James for joining us today. It's been great having you with us.
Thank you very much, Jamie, for having me.
We hope to see you again soon.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.